Shall we play a game?
What is with meat space?
You didn't say the magic word.
The files are in the computer?
We're only using a simple polyphonetically grouped 20 square digit key transpose from booster phonic form with multiple nulls.
After very careful consideration, sir, I've come to the conclusion that your new defense system sucks.
So the combination is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
So it's a code breaker. No, it's the code breaker. Welcome, everyone, to the latest edition of the Cyber Tap. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Matt.
How's it going?
I don't know, man. This quarantine's getting to me.
Is it?
It's been a down start to the month, so.
Oh, man. Well,
I need a little lift, uplift.
I don't know how to help you, Mike. What do you need?
We could talk to some intelligent people, because I'm not.
Yeah, well, we definitely do that today. So today's episode, we are joined by, honestly, one of the best cyber minds that I know. The Chief Information Security Officer and Head of Cyber Business for Infosys, Vishal Salvi. I've had the pleasure of working, Mike, with Vishal for a number of years. We get into that here in this episode. He's got some brilliant answers. He says some nice things about me as well during this episode. And hey, he's brilliant. So I guess you have to believe him, Mike.
It's all true.
Of course, you've been working with me for 7 years, so you know anyway.
I'm obligated to say that.
I'm sure everyone's going to enjoy it. Now, Mike, to cheer your spirits, you know Purdue football's coming back. We're almost
that
there.
That is good news. And so is Rondale Moore. So.
Yeah, Rondale's back. If you're not a Purdue sports fan, this is an All-American athlete that, because of COVID, wasn't going to play, now is going to play. It's been quite the drama here. It's been certainly more dramatic than this episode is. This conversation was easy and light and fun at times, and we hope you enjoy it. This is the Cyber Tap with Vishal Salvi. Well, hello, Vishal. Thanks for joining the Cyber Tap today.
Hey, Matt. How are you? Good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you too. It's been some time since we first met. I was trying to think before the start of the episode today. We were together maybe in November of 2017. Is that right? Was that 17?
Absolutely right. And you were in your shorts and I was wearing all my layers for that.
That's right. That's right. So I remember the conversation really well. It was a really good day. We had a workshop where we were designing our one-off program for cyber education, the partnership between Purdue and Infosys. And I'm sure we'll talk more about that here in a few minutes. But it was November. We had a great workshop, very productive. You were visiting from your home in Mumbai. You were here in Indiana in November. And I think, Mike, it was like 40 degrees. And one of the topics of conversation was how 40 degrees Fahrenheit and how cold it was. And I was thinking, it's not even cold yet. But Vishal, you thought it was a bit chilly outside.
Absolutely. You know, you should visit sultry Mumbai and then you know what I mean.
Yeah, I'd like to. And we were right before the show, we talked a little bit about it, but I had a chance to visit a year ago to India, but I was in Bangalore and Hyderabad and Mysore, which is south and central. Next time, maybe I get a chance to come to Mumbai and I need to see Delhi. I think I should anyway. And so maybe next time we'll find a good reason for me to visit again and I'll see the sultry side, the heat, which so I do much better in November in Indiana.
Yeah, what
than
is
I will
the other
in
end
Mumbai.
Of the spectrum? What do you consider hot?
Well, I think, you know, obviously we measure temperature in degrees centigrade in India, mm-hmm. and anything above 45 is really hot, right? So I can't bear anything above 45, but till 45 degrees centigrade, I'm okay. I can live.
Yeah, and I'd have to put the conversion in because I'm a stupid American, and I never can tell what Celsius to Fahrenheit is, and so... I bet if producer Jim unmuted, he could probably tell us.
I think
he's
that's
got
113 Fahrenheit.
Yeah, 113. I just punched it in too, Mike. Yep. Yeah, you think it is. I know because you just Googled it the same as I did.
No, I totally used my head, I swear.
Yeah, so you're saying unbearable at 113. Yes, you're right. Yes. That is unbearable.
Agreed.
It was warm when I was in Mysore and Bangalore and Hyderabad. It was warm in September, and I think it was running around 90 Fahrenheit those days, and that's warm for me. But it was a good conversation. We had a great workshop, Vishal. I can't believe it's almost been 3 years since we first started this partnership and this endeavor with Infosys and Purdue and CyberTap, and it's been a great one. And again, I'm sure we'll talk about it. But before we jump into that, Vishal, just a quick question for you. How did you get into cyber? Kind of what's your background and how did you end up where you are today?
Oh, you know, that's a very interesting story because, you know, in those days, security was not a clear profession, you know, as a career mm-hmm. choice. And I still remember very vividly, you know, my boss asking me to take up this role of security, and I thought it was a demotion. And I'm talking about just after year 2000, Y2K bug had just got over us. And I said, I'll take it because, you know, I've always had this philosophy that, you know, whatever my leaders, my managers offer me, they would always think best of us. And there was a blind trust, which still continues. But, you know, since then, I've not looked back. So I think I can say that I got into cybersecurity by accident, not by sure. design. And you know, for a long period of time, I thought I'll go back to back to line, as in IT management. But, you know, after 7 years in the role, I decided that I got to, you know, pursue it because it was just unbelievable. And, you know, there was so much of diversity. So that's really how I got in.
Yeah, when we had Eugene Spafford, professor here, and he's been in cybersecurity for 40 years. So we kind of asked him, well, how is that possible? Because cybersecurity didn't really exist. And it did to some extent, right? The people that were researching it were, you know, in the US were the military and the government. And it was more, you know, from an intelligence gathering perspective, it wasn't as much, you know, a defense from, you know, from the public in a way, or from data breaches and things like that. And so it is interesting to see how the cybersecurity domain itself has evolved over the years. What have you seen in your time in security for the last 20 years and that evolution that stands out to you? Are there trends that have popped up along the way, or, you know, just that history? Because I think a lot of our listeners are either just entering their careers, or they're, you know, some of them are still studying for careers in cybersecurity. Even, and of course, we have some that have been in cybersecurity now for years, like us. But what are some of those trends that you've seen over those 20 years that kind of stand out to you?
Well, to start, you know, I had a team of three people with whom I started. I now have 3,500, so that's been quite a journey for me. And but if you look at it, you know, in terms of how the field has transformed, you know, in those days we used to call it IT security. Mm-hmm. Over a period of time, it changed to information security, and somewhere in around 5 years back or 6 years back, it has changed to cyber security. So there has been clearly a significant change in terms of, you know, how while the name has changed, even the profession and the way it drives the business today has changed dramatically, right? So, you know, 10 years back as CISOs, when we used to talk about it, we used to fight for a right to be heard, to be there with mm-hmm. the C-level, to be there at the board. And today, the spotlight is on the CISOs, right? And there is an expectation to perform. And suddenly you're in a different ballgame in an uncharted territory because you always wanted to be there. But once you're there, it's a different battle altogether, you know. And once the spotlight is on you, any flaw, any mistake, any misadventure gets exposed and highlighted. So you have to make sure that you deliver, you execute, and you perform. So that's one dimension of, you know, how the role itself has changed. The other aspect is, you know, the amount of digitization, amount of, especially because of COVID, the amount of acceleration and amplification that has happened in terms of digital has never been seen. It's unprecedented, right? Now, cybersecurity has been a foundational enabler for this massive change to happen. Now, when you look at it, it is. You know, just one bad event that can happen can create a big question mark in terms of, you know, the integrity and the sanctity of this model. So there is a lot which is hinging on cybersecurity now to make sure that this digital transformation, this digital enablement remains and stays. And I think so far, both the digital officers and digital teams, as well as the cybersecurity teams, have done exceedingly well to manage this crisis, right? But we need to keep it that way. We didn't, you know, because the threats have grown, the adversaries have grown, the attacks are getting more and more motivated, more and more persistent, more and more lethal. And so you need to make sure that you get into a completely different realm of how you would want to build the defenses around that. So, I mean, to give you a summarized answer to your question, Matt, there has been a sea change in terms of what the situation was 20 years back and where we are today. It is, cybersecurity is mainstream. Mm-hmm. It is a business enabler. And it is something which is so fundamental for today's business context.
Now, I just wanted to confirm. Did you say you went from 3 to 3,500 staff members?
That's right.
Wow, man. It gave me some heart palpitations just thinking about the performance reviews you got to do. Every year.
I imagine he doesn't have to do all 3,500. Yeah. It's not like they're all direct reports. Now, to that effect, before we kind of continue on your line of consciousness here, Vishal, do you still, those first three, any of them still with you?
Well, because I have shifted companies, I worked in 7 organizations.
I see.
And this was in my past life. But then I am definitely in touch with all the three of them. I know what they're doing, and we are all connected. So, in fact, that's been the, you know, somehow I've been blessed. It's been a feature of my experience with all my teams that they have always stayed in touch. And we have remained connected. And, you know, and in today's world, when we have LinkedIn, we have social media, you know, it's all the more easier to be in touch with each other.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it allows us to have this podcast from, you know, we have our producer and our technician. So technician Eric, producer Jim, Mike and I all in different locations here in the state of Indiana, and you joining from, I think it's a 9.5-hour difference across the world. So, you know, we're very lucky to have the technology that allows us to stay in touch and bring us together. I wanted to touch on one thing that you were mentioning through your answer there, Vishal, is this, the digitization of the world, and then how it's ramped up in the 20 years, but then an incredible digital transformation spike that we're likely seeing and will see through this COVID pandemic. So I know here in the States, we've seen every business. I mean, we've talked about it over the summer with Mike. Mike was helping his brother, who's a restaurateur, digitize their operation so they could do, you know, online ordering and carry out and things just to sustain business. You see it from a single restaurant owner up through major Fortune X companies that are having to even ramp up faster. So one thing I'm curious to hear from you, Vishal, is from a global perspective, what have you seen in business and cybersecurity specifically over the last 6 months that has been driving business for Infosys and in our domain and in our sector? Is it just the digitization of more and faster? Or I guess, what other areas have really ramped up from an IT infrastructure perspective that is helping to drive some of the cybersecurity? Can you shed any light on a global perspective on that for us?
So, Matt, we are living in extraordinary times, and you will agree with me, right? There have been
absolutely
some unexpected, life-changing, life-defining changes that we have seen, which I think in the history of the mankind, perhaps we would have not seen, right? Yeah. So event like this is clearly something which we were not prepared for, we were ready for, you know, in terms of all the resources which were required. But I think what is happening is that, you know, this is just one example, which is COVID. But, you know, there are rapid advancements that are happening, and we've been constantly innovating. So if you look at from a technology perspective, the mega trends which we are seeing is the adoption of cloud. Has been unprecedented. You know, 5 years back, if you had gone to a CISO and asked him about migration of his company to cloud, he would have been a Chances are he would have said that, you know, this is not going to happen under my watch, right? Things are so different now. You know, I think it is unprecedented. That is the way to go. And, you know, everybody is adopting cloud. Number two, the consumerization of IT, the digitization of IT, and also the massive use of mobile phones and mobile devices is an unprecedented change, right? So that is putting a lot of stress on how the experience is going to be, how we are going to respond to that demand, which is coming from digital natives, and so on and so forth. And the third thing is, you know, this massive adoption of open source, right? And how that collaboration and sharing of software and other things is actually, you know, shaping the future of technology. Now, all these trends are having a significant impact on how cybersecurity is going to operate, right? And it is an opportunity as well as it's a significant challenge. And I think both needs to be seen in the right context, because both are very, very important. It's an opportunity because, you know, you can ride that same wave of, you know, adopting open source, adopting AI, ML, adopting cloud. And I think the cybersecurity industry is actually doing that. Now, when we look at it, you know, while we are going through this, we are almost now talking about security as a code. What do we mean by that? Is that no longer it will be human beings who will be doing a waterfall model of looking at your request, analyzing your request, and then approving. Those days are gone, because you just cannot scale at the speed at which, you know, technology is demanding you to deliver. For example, right now we're talking about on-demand database creation, on-demand app creation, on-demand virtualization. Now, all of that does not allow you to factor in any review or any analysis or any validation. And so security is going to be delivered as a code, right? And so this is a major shift which is happening in terms of how we are looking at cybersecurity in today's context is very, very different. In fact, one of the themes for my team as a strategy for this year is refresh. And the reason there is a need to refresh is because we have to unlearn some of the things that we have been taught in terms of principles, in terms of processes, because they are not able to scale for the future. So these are some of the changes which are happening, Matt, in terms of how we are looking at cyber in today's context.
So when you look at the enterprise and securing the enterprise, the perimeter has been blown up because of COVID. So here I know for us in the US, and all of us are working remotely, the amount of folks and that are not in the office has extended the perimeter far beyond what anyone in a security role would normally be comfortable in. Are you seeing that on a global scale as well? Have global companies shifted more to remote work? You get to interact with so many more than we do. So I'm just kind of curious if you're seeing that trend as well.
So around 2 months back, we had a global CISO conference, and we did a survey on, you know, the remote working in their offices, and 75% of the CISOs confirmed that 75% of the organizations are actually currently having their workload working from home, right? So it's a 75-75. 75% of the people are working in 75% of the organizations.
Wow.
So if you look at Infosys, we are almost 100% working from home or remote, right? And that's because, you know, human safety and human, health is more important than taking any risk around that. So we made some, we have implemented some safeguards into making sure that we take our customers' approval, amend our contractual obligations, make sure there is security which is implemented when you are working from home, and so on and so forth. So in reality, before, for example, COVID happened, we were already talking about, you know, borderless security, you know, because that change was already happening. For example, at Infosys, we were allowing people to work from home for many, many years now. It's not a new concept. It's just that we used to be around 20% working from home. Now we are 100% working from home, right? So we had to scale that model.
Sure.
But that model already existed, right? Mm-hmm. But I think if you look at the other aspect of this, Matt, what's happening is that there is now, a reality that, you know, we are getting into a new normal, if I have to use that cliche word, right? And I think, I think what's going to happen is that there is a need to have anywhere, any device, anytime access, which needs to be granted. And that is reality. And you need to still make sure that there is enough assurance of security. So that is driving two fundamental changes in the security architecture. The first change is that the sensor, which is on the endpoint or the host, is going to play a very important role in future for cybersecurity architecture, because the sensor is not just a software which is going to collect telemetry and give visibility, but it is also going to help you enforce controls as you see a threat or a risk on that particular device. And the second important change which is happening is that the intelligence is actually going to the cloud. And that was always required for cybersecurity scale. The erstwhile model, which is also unfortunately a current model for a lot of organizations, of signature-based security was just not able to scale to the threats that were actually seen earlier as well as now. So intelligence has gone to the cloud, and the sensor is becoming more and more important and prominent role in the security architecture. So those are the two things that that are happening. And then through that, you can actually move every aspect of your control point on the edge, right? Whether you talk about your access control or DLP or encryption or VPN or SSL, all of that can be enforced at the edge.
So if you're at 100% now for your remote workforce, do you see that more as a permanent change, or do you think it might skew back a little bit and have more of a corporate environment to some degree?
So, Mike, I think the thing is, you know, we don't know. We really don't know how things are going to pan out. We don't even know when the vaccine is going to come, right? How long it is going to take, how long it will take before things become normal, right? So if it's going to take 1 year, then how much of this current behavior will have a lasting impact on the future of work? We don't know, right? But what we think is that, which is going to happen, is that there is going to be a need to have a social connect, because humans, at the end of the day, are social animals. And there would be a need for people to come together, collaborate together, talk to each other in person, and create create innovation, create ideas, solve large problems, right? So I don't think that's going to go completely away, right? Once things become normal, we believe that's going to happen. So what we believe is that it's quite possible that it's going to be a kind of a hybrid model where we could have a floating population of people depending on their need to come to a common place, not necessarily office, but some common place where they would come and collaborate and then continue to work remote. Because, you know, there is another trend that we are seeing happening across the globe, which is that people are migrating from ultra-urban or urban location to semi-urban or rural location because there is no dependency on a particular location and every location is connected, right? So I was talking to one of my colleagues, and she was... She was based out of Chennai, which is the southern city of India. Today, she said that, you know, she's just packed up her home and moved to her hometown in Kerala, which is another southern city in India. And it's a permanent change till such time that what happens in future. So people are going back to their ancestral homes and getting more comfortable over there because they could. And I think we are seeing the similar trend in North America, you know, where people are people, because it improves their lifestyle, because they may be living in a small apartments, whereas they can actually have a much larger space for them to work and still, you know, be as productive as they were when they were in a urban location. So I guess, you know, we don't know the right answer because it has got a lot of variables, and it's therefore future is in lot sense very unpredictable. And we'll have to just go. But I think one thing is clear is that from a cybersecurity point of view, we need to be ready to support this hybrid model, this remote model. And I think so far we are doing good.
It's a very, very interesting point. It's a decision that we and our group is going to have to come up with within the next year because of our lease and our physical space. So right. It's nice to get a different point of view.
Yeah, absolutely.
So with the quarantine having, you know, the side effects that the quarantines do here in the States, we kind of experienced very early on a lot of panic buying of just strange items or odd behavior. Have you witnessed any of that where you're at?
It's not really a cyber question, but we did see some weird human behavior here. And so I would love to know if there was any weird human behavior you saw, Vishal.
You know, for a change, I'm very happy to take a non-cyber question. Yeah, I think we have a very interesting model in India. Okay, so which was basically every place in India, we call it as mom and pop shops. I don't know whether you can relate to that.
We do.
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So if you just step out of your house, you'll get a mom and pop shop, okay? And their business model was threatened because of the large malls and the large hyper centers, and you know, like
sure,
you know, Walmarts or Home Depot or other such stores, right? So we never, we always had this distribution, and that distribution is absolutely intact, right? Now, what happened is that just when the lockdown was initiated, all the malls and all the hyper centers were asked also to be locked down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And actually, it's these mom and shop stores and small grocery stores who actually were always open throughout this crisis. And they remain open even now. And I think they have been supporting all the requirements and all the needs of the people. So there was really, there was hardly any panic buying in India, right? Because there was always this person who was always available and always stocked. Initially, we had some, you know, for the first month, we had some of the items which were not available, but within a month's time, the whole supply chain was sorted out. And since then, you know, everything has been normal. There has been no short supply of any item at all. And clearly Amazon is very big in India, and Amazon mm-hmm. has been also delivering mm-hmm. Along with a lot of online shopping. So that's another trend which is there. So I have, for example, you know, for the last 7 months, not stepped out from my house unless I have to go and do this basic shopping. Which is emergency required, but most of the stuff actually comes delivered to my home.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's in some way it's been a bit opposite here, and I have to be honest. I much prefer what you're describing in India, where the local vendors are staying open and supporting the community as opposed to the large centers of commerce. And, you know, you mentioned a few stores. Those stores here have remained open for the most part. So our large department stores in the Midwest, we have Walmart and Meijer. Meijer's very similar to Walmart, started in Michigan, I believe, and Target, which is obviously a global brand, and Home Depot and Lowe's, and those things have all stayed open while the other ones have been kind of forced to close and have struggled. I much prefer the local business to support the community. That's a bit of commentary here, but it sounds like it's worked out well. And in my time in India, I loved the mom and pop shops. One of my favorite things was to stop along the roadside for a coconut water, which you can't do here. If I want a coconut water, I have to go to Costco and pay $4 for a little carton of it.
Probably not as fresh.
Yeah, no, it's not fresh at all. A gentleman would use a large blade to open the coconut and give me a straw, and I'd drink straight from it. And that was one of my favorite things. Of course, when I was in India, I was there, of course, visiting Infosys, and Vishal, your team took such good care of us and showed us everything and anything to do. And it was a trip of a lifetime, really, for me. And I greatly appreciated the culture. And I love to hear that the mom and pop shops are sustaining life in your communities. And I think that's really interesting. So thanks for sharing that non-cybersecurity answer. I appreciate that. It makes the conversation more fun. But I do want to jump back to one other topic. Before we wrap here in a little, and that's about the shortage of workforce. And so, you know, we've seen the statistics you've quoted, I'm sure, in a number of talks, Vishal, any number of talks, and we talk about it on this podcast. We talk about it in our staff meetings and with other leadership around the globe in cybersecurity, that there are not enough cybersecurity and even technical professionals to fill the demand for cybersecurity roles. And so I know Infosys is trying to attack this head on. So can you just offer our listeners a little insight into how Infosys is attacking this problem?
Sure, Matt. And I think, you know, you as Purdue has played a very significant role in our strategy to solve this problem in our own way. And, you know, the world needs, extremely passionate, extremely skilled, highly motivated cybersecurity professionals. Mm-hmm. And they also need people who have a sound understanding of the foundational knowledge of cybersecurity. I mean, I am, you may call me old school, but I think consistency in leadership comes from taking decisions on sound principles. And I think in cybersecurity, it's so important to understand the underlying principles, which are very universal, which will always stand the test of time. And so it was very fundamental for us to create and curate a course, which we are able to, give to every single person joining our cybersecurity practice, so that we are able to get them to understand the core principles of security as well as values that are so important when you join this profession. And so Purdue has been a great partner for us for last year and a half. We have just recently crossed our milestone of 1,000 people who have got trained from this course. Mm-hmm. And I think it's been a very strategic investment from our side, because it's so powerful. And everywhere we talk about this, and everywhere we are able to display the caliber of our people because of this, has been extraordinary, right? So it is something which we are extremely proud of and extremely pleased with the way the things have gone by. And I think learning and philosophy of learning is so important for the topic of cyber. So our approach to cybersecurity and managing this demand-supply imbalance is to, catch individuals when they are fresh after their graduation, mm-hmm, and right. get them trained into this 16 weeks course, and then get them into our organization. And I think there is a lot of loyalty and connect and association when we apply this model, and this model scales, and this model, because it's very difficult to do lateral hiring at that scale that it we is. Currently operate. So we're constantly, so just to give you the sense of planning, if we were to hire somebody 9 months, get somebody in production 9 months from now, we start planning for that from today. And that's how we need to plan, so that we are able to get that level of influx, which goes through this massive training program, before we are able to get them ready for production use.
Yeah, I think that's what's great about your approach at Infosys, and Vishal, part of your strategy is to really build this workforce almost from scratch, because the problem is the problem. It is such that there aren't enough. There's not enough lateral hires for Infosys to go after. And they're expensive, and it's harder, and it takes time, just as it takes time to build from scratch. And so with cyber, I think it's a domain where if you get get people started and interested early, you start to develop that cyber mindset, that adversarial thinking, the folks that can, you can train on tools and you can train on technologies, but really getting that mindset around cybersecurity and what it means to secure an enterprise and to protect people's data. And it's beyond just the corporate world. It's to protect citizens. It's to protect the people around us from the loss of their data or any hardship that comes from data breach or cybersecurity attack or whatever it might be. We highlighted a story last week where a hospital was attacked and it had impact on human life directly and those types of things. To be involved in that and to get people to see the importance from a very early start in their career is, I think, the best way to tackle the shortage of workforce. And I'm so thankful for Infosys and their dedication to solving this issue across the globe and for partnering with us. And as you mentioned, we've been a valuable partner to you, but you've been as equally valuable to us. We get a whole new perspective on what it means to educate the world in cybersecurity. And I'm thankful for my team to be involved with it, of course, and for us to get to deliver to really some excellent world-class folks at Infosys, whether they're fresh hires or folks that have worked within your organization for some time and are going through a skilling or reskilling or whatever it might be. And we've had the opportunity to work with some of your leaders in our courses. And I have to tell you, when your leadership takes these courses, I know it's a significant effort to go through them. They perform so well. And so I can see why Infosys is a leader in this space and a leader in solving the workforce development. So again, I just very much appreciate this partnership as well and look forward to how it continues in the future. And so I love the fact that you're aggressively building the future workforce for cybersecurity, not just in India, but here in the US as well. So there's a huge strategy around US talent that you have been implementing across the board, really, not just in cyber. And in Indiana alone, you know, the number of jobs that have been created for Infosys, these are, you know, high paying, incredibly talented folks that are here to solve issues right in our backyard. Talk a little bit about that from a cybersecurity perspective, Vishal, because we've had a chance to work with some of these folks in Indianapolis and some of your other centers down in Texas and other places. So I think that's a really interesting aspect that I don't think we hear about it enough or talk about it enough. So what's Infosys's role in building that cyber talent right here in the US as well?
Yeah, sure, Matt. But before I do that, I also want to just call out the extraordinary support that you have personally, given to drive this from Purdue side, you know, because it's been a great partnership. I have known you since we started this program, and we have constantly been supporting each other, to achieve this. So, you know, thank you so much for your leadership. Now, in terms of, our localization strategy, I mean, I was in Indianapolis to launch our Cyber Defense Center in right. Indianapolis on 3rd of March, just when COVID, just right. when that actually was my last international visit.
And we were all there with no masks.
Yes. Although we had masks at the counter at registration, but nobody used them then.
No.
So, yeah, but I think, you know, we've come a long way since then. But, you know, I think the reason we selected Indiana is because it's, because we were so close to Purdue, right? So that was the reason. Otherwise, we could have done it any other place because we wanted that proximity. And a lot of the people who have actually undergone the Purdue course are now manning the Cyber Defense Center. Right. Although right now they're working from home, but eventually they'll come back to the office, right? So, you know, I think that has really worked out very well for us because this 6 or 7 centers and hubs, innovation hubs that we have created. And we have now more than 26 to 27,000 people of Infosys working out of North America. So we have been growing from strength to strength. And, that is a very important. In fact, the reason that strategy has really helped us is because in COVID times, nobody can travel to US nor from US, right? And the reason we've been able to manage and, show such extraordinary performance has been only because of the way we have been able to drive this localization strategy. And cyber is also riding that same wave. So, you know, it's really worked out well for us, Matt.
Yeah, great. I think so too. And yeah, I absolutely love it. It's great to have Infosys right here in our backyard, less than an hour away for us. And so, and it's a benefit to the state of Indiana and the businesses around. I think your localization strategy and the hubs that you've set up and strategically around the country, I think it's a great thing to see. It's a great thing to be part of. And we absolutely love the partnership with Infosys.
Yep. Thank you so much for that. That was really informative and fun. And so right now, I think it would be a great time to transition to talking about some news articles. So Vishal, do you have any news article you might like to share?
So I think one of the important cybersecurity news, which is shaping the, you know, the current and the future of our industry is this ransomware attacks, right?
Mm, yeah.
But I think what we are seeing is two things. You know, the one trend is about it's not just ransom to decrypt and give the keys and decrypt your data, but also if you don't pay, then I'm going to publish that information. I'm going to extract that information and make it public. So that's another method of ransom that is taking place. But I think more recently, in the last 2-3 weeks, there is a ransom DDoS, which is a new trend, and multiple global organizations have received this threat for ransom DDoS, where if you don't pay a ransom, then their companies will get attacked through a distributed denial of service attack. So I think that is something which we need to take a note of, and see how we want to create your defenses and prepare your organization to face something like that.
Yeah, I've seen some articles popping up about that too. And it seems like ransomware, even in the past, you know, year or so, has really started to evolve. As you mentioned, I think the trends that we saw, even when we just started this podcast, was a very traditional ransomware where you encrypt and hold hostage that data, you pay, they provide keys and you decrypt. And there didn't seem to be a trend of data release or breach to go along with it. Now it seems that they encrypt, copy first, then encrypt, then hold those keys at ransom. And then if you don't pay, they slowly trickle the data out there, which obviously adds a new dynamic. And then this dynamic of, well, it's going to be a full denial of service. Not only do we hold your data at ransom through encryption, but we're going to completely kill availability of systems until you pay as well. And so, I mean, that's what denial of service is. It in the CIA triad, it attacks availability. And so when we talk about this trend, it not only it stops the business, it holds the data at bay, and then also is a potential for a breach of data. So it's now becoming this weird triple threat. And this evolution is not a good one. And so we've got to do something to continue to counteract it from a cybersecurity perspective. So yeah, that's an interesting article. Mike, did you see anything in the news that jumped out at you this week?
Well, yes, I wouldn't call it. I guess it would be like, have you ever seen way back when The Lighter Side of Sports? You saw the bloopers. Or,
oh, yeah, the blooper reels. The blooper reels. Yeah, sure. Fail videos.
the article or whatever is more in that vein than anything else. This comes from Forbes.com.
Wait, Mike, before you go on, I want to tell the listeners, this is gonna surprise some folks. We don't discuss what news articles we're bringing ahead of time. Right, Mike, I have no knowledge. This is true, no. Vishal. I have no knowledge of what Mike is going to talk about. We didn't know what you were going to bring. And Vishal, we did not prep you with what we would bring to the table today, correct?
You did
this
not.
New.
You did
okay.
Not.
I want to get that out there because I'm going to stop Mike right now and I'm going to guess. There's a joke that we have, Vishal, that Mike and I share a brain sometimes. We've worked with each other for 7 years, over 7 years, and we're roughly the same age. We have a lot of the same interests. That's why we like to do this podcast together. I'm guessing he's going to talk about the hacker that uploaded his fingerprint.
Oh, man, come on.
Am I right?
Yes.
Now, I promise you, I had no previous knowledge. Vishal can vouch for us. We did not talk about this in pre-record prep or anything. And Vishal, I kid you not, it's the same article I was going to talk about.
Is that the article that also talks about the fish tank in the casino?
I'm not sure about that one. I think it is. Yes, the parking meter and the fish tank and the floorboard.
Yes.
Of all of the articles we possibly could have brought to bear today, Mike and I chose the same one. Without any knowledge what each other's going to do. Oh, Vishal. I feel like we've gone back into our amateur hour here, Mike.
Maybe we need to do a little conversation beforehand.
I think this is the beauty. We talked about this. We did talk about. We love an organic conversation, and this is what makes it organic. So, Mike, why don't you tell Vishal, because I already know what the article's about, and we could have a quick conversation before we wrap here.
I think I have a side one about a Comcast TV remote, but it's not as good, so. All right, I'll stick with what I got. So Forbes.com, Davey Winder, a cybersecurity expert, talked with Max Heinemeier, director of threat hunting at Darktrace. They created an AI-powered cybersecurity solutions, and it's been running for about 7 years. So he kind of wanted to look back and say, you know, what are some of the weirdest attacks or some of the dumbest attacks that you've witnessed during that seven-year span? So Heinemeier reported that so early on, they talked about there were some hackers that like replaced an image of the Spanish prime minister with a picture of Mr. Bean on the EU presidency yep. site, or an Iranian nuclear facility was hacked to play Thunderstruck from AC/DC at full volume. But the one that they wanted to highlight was where perpetrators purposely left their fingerprints at a crime scene. And so they were trying to hack into a luxury goods business center, which had installed 10 fingerprint scanners so as to restrict access to warehouses in efforts to reduce risk. Unbeknownst to them, the attacker began exploiting vulnerabilities in one of the scanners. And in perhaps one of the weirdest hacker moves, they started deleting the authorized fingerprints and uploading their own in the hope of gaining physical access. So the AI picked this up because one of the scanners was behaving differently than the others, meaning security team became aware of the attacks within minutes. And of course, they had pretty conclusive evidence to provide to law enforcement.
Got it.
Yeah, so the attacker was putting their fingerprint into the system to try to gain physical access. I don't know why you would think that that was a good idea. I mean, everyone knows if you're going to commit a basic non-cyber crime, you got to wear gloves. I mean, fingerprints identify you. This, yeah, it's a pretty interesting article. I mean, unbelievable. I've seen some crazy behavior in the IT world, but that one's pretty bad for sure.
So did you want to read that article over?
No, I don't want to reintroduce it. In fact, I think we're kind of running up against our time with Vishal today. I just thought it was great that we picked the same article. And if you wanted to check that one out, there's some other interesting tidbits from that article on Forbes.com. We'd recommend our listeners go check that one out. But with that, we've run out of time with Vishal. We want to be respectful of your time. We very much appreciate you joining us today for this conversation. We think it was excellent. And, thank you so much for your time today, Vishal, and gracing our listeners with your incredible cyber mind. So thanks again.
Thank you so much, Matt and Mike. And it was just great to have a great conversation with both of you. And thank you very much for having me here today.
Yeah, thanks, Vishal. And as always, to our listeners, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to us, cybertappodcast@purdue.edu. Take care, everyone. Bye.